if our movement is a practice that adds more stress to our body, we're just amplifying the stress in our body. And that's why sometimes some of the things that we're doing, it's not practical or healthy for you. And so just looking at that as a conversation to be like, I'm having a loving conversation with my body.
Hey everybody, Emily Abadi here. You are listening to episode 296 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I talk to inspirational people about everything from their highest highs and toughest moments to essential tips on how to live a healthier, happier, more motivated life. We all go through our fair share of hurdles. My goal through these discussions is to empower you to better navigate yours and move with intention so that you can stride toward your own big potential and, of course, have some fun along the way. Hello, everyone. How are we doing? What's going on? I feel like it's been a minute since I've kind of given the lowdown on the gist of what's happening here on the show. So as I just told you, you're listening to Hurdle. My name is Emily Abadi. I am a veteran fitness and wellness health journalist, and I'm also a certified professional coach, which you can liken to a life coach, in addition to a certified run coach, UESCA, a certified personal trainer via ACE, and a level one precision nutrition coach. Those are just some of the accolades that I have in my toolbox that help me not only come to you with safe and relative conversation and information, but also enable me to have responsible conversations with everyone that sits down with me for the show. I firmly believe that it is our most difficult moments that are our biggest teachers. And through overcoming the hurdles that we face in life, we have an opportunity to grow stronger and become better people. Now that that's out of the way, today, let's talk about what we're doing here on Hurdle. I'm chatting with the ever lovely Rebecca Price. She is a Nike global trainer as well as a yoga teacher. And we are centering our discussion all around how to combat stress and come back to calm when life feels really hectic. She offers so many unbelievable tips. Like, truly, you're going to need either your fingers at the ready in your notes app, or perhaps a pen and paper to write them down. From movement and breath work, breath being one of our most readily available tools that we do not use to our advantage nearly enough, to seeking out and utilizing talk therapy, making routines within life, and being cognizant of what your inputs are. What are the things that you are consuming, not just within your diet in terms of nutrition, but also the things that you surround yourself with, the people that you're around, the things that you are checking out on social media. We have the opportunity to monitor this and also curate a better experience. Loved this chat. Absolutely love Rebecca. She's truly such a light for her community up in Toronto and beyond. And I am elated to bring it to the feed. Make sure you're following along with Hurdle over on social. It's at Hurdle Podcast. I myself am over at Emily Abadi. And with that, let's get to it. Let's get to hurdling. Today, I'm sitting back down with the ever lovely Rebecca Price. How are we doing?
We are doing great.
Oh, the voice I feel as though people hear my voice and they either are really down with it or they're like, never again. I'm all set. Whenever I hear your voice, it is entirely like the most soothing part of my morning. I'm so happy.
No, I've had people, I just taught recently and someone was just like, can you just record like messages like, good morning, you're worthy, I love you. Like, she's like, please, because I just love the sound of your voice. And I'm like, thanks.
You're like, I could do that.
I could do that.
You can do that and then you can monetize that.
That is very true. That is very true.
It's like there's like OnlyFans for feet. Yeah. Like you're just like, good morning.
Yeah. And you know what? Is there an OnlyFans just for voices? I wonder.
Is that technically ASMR?
That is ASMR.
Like the tapping?
Yeah. I'd be like, good morning, or like ding, ring a bell and be like,
Oh my God, we're onto a whole concept. Someone can feel free to DM us and let us know if there is some sort of a place where we should be doing special voiceovers.
Right.
Is this, what's the other platform with celebrities where they do the messages? Cameo.
Oh, I never even heard that.
Cameo went bankrupt. Who knows? Anyway, we're gonna get on that. I'm excited to be sitting back down with you today.
I'm excited to be here as well.
I love whenever you're in New York, I'm like, please come through the studio.
Yeah.
Let's do something great.
Yeah.
You were in New York this time, originally hailing from Toronto, to do some fun classing, get together with some folks. Talk to us about what you did.
I hosted it was called ELIRA, which is Yoruba for wellness. And it was a Black wellness experience featuring like meditation, movement, and mindfulness. And I had my co-trainers, Tara Nicholas from Nike and David Carson as well from Nike Training. We all pulled up, landed in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Wellness Club and put it on a really great community event, focused a lot on like community healing, talking about the importance of self-care and well-being, and just held space with each other and for each other in a loving and nourishing way.
Oh, it sounds delightful.
Yeah.
And it was a good success?
It was a huge success. I woke up feeling really grateful. I probably sent one of the sappiest emails to everybody, like, I love you, but and just expressing my gratitude and, you know, appreciation of their support, mm-hmm. Especially because sometimes when you have an idea and you're betting on yourself, sometimes it's a scary place to be. Like imposter syndrome shows up. So many things show up in that space and you invest so much time and energy. And then when you actually see it come to life, you're like, okay, I did that. And, you know, just, you know, I wanted to make sure I thank the people that were involved in making it possible.
Yeah, I did that. Oh, yeah. And it's so special to take that time to reflect something that we'll talk a little bit about today when it comes to managing stress, which is the topic of the day. We're here specifically in the studio to talk about how to find calm, how to manage stress. We're on the cusp of a new season right now. Spring has sprung. And with that, it's an opportunity to come back to self and really do an inventory of what's working for you and what's not working for you. And what's not working for us as a society right now is this chronic stress, ambient anxiety lifestyle. We are not about that.
I think that we've bought too much into like burnout culture and we've like normalized it to the point that when we need to make time for rest and restoration and just slowing down, it's a struggle for us. And we feel so much guilt around that. And so like, it's really important to take stock and just do like an internal inventory and an external inventory of like things, like you said, that work, don't work, that need to shift and need to change so that you can just kind of like feel a little bit more at ease. Mm-hmm. And I really like to see people start shifting from like this flight, fright, fawn, fear, you know, system to like one that's like ease and that's nourishing and that's like simple in a way, but beneficial, that still allows you to achieve the things that you want to achieve. Because I think people think that if you like slow down, that you're not going to get things done, but also recognize that slowing down actually provides you the space to get things done, not only the right way, but what's the best way for you too as well.
Yeah, this really echoes the sentiments that I subscribe to, which is being kind but firm as mm-hmm. well. Like you don't have to be a jerk or bossy to get the things that you want. You can be a kind person and be good to people and also accomplish what it is you're after. And there's kind of a misconception with that sometimes in that people think you need to kind of step on others to get to the top. But in my belief system, if you're stepping on others, then you're doing it wrong. And that there's room for everyone at the table. It's the person that's going to get ahead is someone who pulls out a chair from the table and says, take a seat.
Yep.
For me, that's the only way that I want to get to the proverbial mountaintop.
And I think it's a really good way for us to learn how to be in better community with each other, right? Like, you know, and I think that, you know, as the world is so huge, but it's also really small, like collaboration, being connected with each other is really important. And like more of us are thriving when we bring other people along rather than just saying, okay, I got this and it's all about me. And mm-hmm. that's very individualistic. And I feel like that's counterproductive to our overall collective and individual well-being. So like, you know, I'm one of those people too. Some people say I'm too nice. and that's okay. I'll wear that hat and that badge very proudly. But I do believe that, you know, more work gets done when you are able to sit at a table and have extra chairs and pull them out for people to be a part of that table with you.
Also, as a single woman, like mm-hmm. I do enough on my own.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So I love the opportunity to collaborate with other individuals, even if it is on a brand project where, say, I'm hosting something or I'm the figurehead for that experience. Cool. In. But the exciting part for me is all the work that happens up until the point where we're ready for me to get on the mic. It's the collaboration between me and individuals on the marketing team. It's the weekly meetings where it's like, oh, I have a team all of a sudden that I didn't have last week. That's the stuff that excites me. The stuff where we get to go in and sit down at a table together and ideate together and create experiences that benefit others coming together in our like-minded passions, our like-minded purposes.
Right. No, I agree. And I think that it just allows more versatility, diversity, and it just creates more robustness because, again, like you're also having different perspectives add. So it's like you start with this little seed and it just kind of flourishes and grows into this beautiful plant because people are adding onto it. And then also sometimes it's like okay for you to not do it all by yourself. Mm-hmm. And like feeling that support is so nourishing too as well, especially when you are like I'm hyper independent and you're always doing stuff on your own. And sometimes it's just like nice to turn around and be like, oh my God, there's someone here with me that can help. And that for me, especially like for instance, like this event, it was really good to be able to like tap into Tara, tap into David, tap into like the rest of the team who helped curate the experience and be like, oh, like I don't have to do this right now. Like you've got this handled or you know what I mean? And that collaboration and, you know, which means community at the end of the day was really beautiful.
What does stress look like right now in your life?
Something that I'm trying to avoid.
Run away from like the plague.
Honestly, full transparency, it is something that I actively engage in trying to avoid. I know there's a group of people in the wellness industry who like to talk about stress as being something that's good for you and healthy for you, you know, and I think that regardless, we live in a society that are always going to have systems in place that are going to make you have stress, right? However, you know, that is something that I actively engage in trying to avoid and, you know, just focusing on cultivating practices that allow me to be softer in a very hard world. So like recently I started, it's called the 75 Soft Healing Challenge. And it's a take on the 75 hard, but I also wanted to do that healing part to it, not just like 75 soft, but like healing because when you're engaging in practices and routines and things of that nature that allow you to be like 1% better or allow you to feel like more supported and nourished, there's a healing that happens as well. And so, you know, part and parcel for me, like running away, or and I wouldn't say running away, like stepping away from like this livelihood of being enveloped in stress is that it's just not healthy for me physically, emotionally, and spiritually on so many different levels. And then also, you know, with my illness, stress is not it for me. So mm-hmm. I really have to be mindful of the ways in which stress shows up for me and how I navigate through it.
Yeah, totally understandable. And to have the awareness of, okay, this is a stressful situation. It's not serving me. And also having the awareness of if I implement X, then this is what will happen. That's so special to be able to get you to a place where you want to be. And also taking ownership over that. I think a lot of the time when we talk about navigating stress, there can be a little bit of a victim mindset. It's like, well, this is just how it is now. And getting to a place instead where you can become the person that reclaims how you want to feel, reclaims the things that are within your control to navigate a particular environment. I live in Brooklyn, New York, right? Like, Brooklyn is not necessarily inherently a place that's going to be stress-free. There's traffic everywhere. There is honking outside of my window. There are way too many people. But in that, I have been able to find certain routines, and we'll talk about routines shortly, that fill me up and nurture my soul so that I don't feel stressed the moment that I walk out the door. To each their own. But I know that it is up to me to cultivate the environment. Just like you said, you know that you have the power to do the same. And then I can make some really good decisions for myself moving forward after I filled up my own cup. Oxygen mask for me, take care of everybody else.
Yeah. And I think it's really important for us to recognize the importance of, like, I would say that you're creating your pockets of peace. Like, you know what I mean? You're creating pockets of peace for yourself in the midst of the chaos, right? And so, like, you know, and like Brooklyn is a very lively city, but you know, we're sitting here and it's really quiet and peaceful at the same time. So like, how are you cultivating that in your spaces, like internally, externally, and things of that nature, just because like, it's really important, especially as we're like continuing to be put in places and situations and be around people that may not be, you know, as supportive or nourishing to help us just thrive.
I love an I am statement, like I am deserving of peace.
Yeah.
And even it could be general like that, or if that feels overwhelming or a little too much, it can even be I am deserving of pockets of peace. And saying things like that and taking that step to claim that, that in itself is entirely powerful, right? That in itself might seem so small, but saying something like that really sets the tone for what you can do moving forward. Now, I know there are a myriad of different ways that we can talk about finding and reclaiming calm and managing stress. I want to kick our conversation off, to no one's surprise, with movement. Now, movement can look different for every individual and even for the same individual, depending on the day, right? So why is it that movement is an integral part of the equation when it comes to managing stress?
I personally think that movement is like one of the main tenets. And I really want to be mindful of the fact that like, I understand how movement and being able to move one's body is also a privilege, right? And so I don't take that lightly. That being said, the body absorbs everything, right? You know, we've heard the book, The Body Keeps Score. There's so much information that's out there that really indicates to everyone the ways in which our body stores stress and how it shows up, not just through like illnesses. It could just be through our skin, like so many different ways our body absorbs trauma and things of that nature. So for me, movement is like a somatic experience. Movement allows us to move things through, right? And so like, for instance, if something is stressing me, one of my go-to things is to go for a walk. So like, I might be in a stressful situation or have a stressful conversation or maybe even an argument with somebody. But then afterwards, I'll be like, okay, how am I going to move through this? I might just put on my shoes and go outside for a walk and just go by the water, do whatever I need to do. I think sometimes what's hard for people is that when we are going through stressful situations and in the midst of stress and moving through stress, we then stop. And then everything just sits with us. And like, you can see how that kind of shows up in your body, like how your shoulders might feel tight or how sometimes like, I don't know, like maybe your belly feels a little hot, like because you're mad about something, or your hips, you know, chronically, a lot of people show up to classes with really hella tight hips, right? So like, you know, your body lets you know, right? And it could be like a migraine, like things happen when you're under a lot of stress. And our ability to kind of like find ways to move that stress out of our body is something that is like a really useful practice that helps us not maintain the level of stress that's in our bodies, right? And like, there's documentation that shows like even just a little bit of like stretching or yoga helps people decompress, right? Like even before bed, legs up the wall is like one of the best moves that you could do. You know how many times I've like fallen asleep with legs up the wall? Like, you know what I mean? Like, cause I'm just like, oh, let me, and the next thing you know, I'm like, whoa, how did I get here? Just finding one or two little micro practices that you can turn into macro practices when you really need are really important. But understanding that everything that we, like we put things into our body, not just food and water and drinks, but we put so much into our body and stress is stored in so many different ways in our body. And so we have to start working on finding ways to move through that stress and move that stress out of our bodies. Like that movement is literally expelling that stress out of our body.
Hi, my name is Emily Abadi and I have crazy tight hips. It's me. Yes. And I love, love, love the point you made about micro macro movements, right? Knowing that it doesn't need to be a hour-long workout.
No.
All you need to do is just move the energy, right? So maybe that is a walk around the block after getting an undesirable email, or perhaps it is making sure that for 10 minutes before you start your workday, if you rolled out of bed, you're doing some sort of stretching in your living room. It's all going to help move things around. And also accepting that sometimes movement isn't going to look like you'd hoped.
Yeah.
Okay. So sometimes maybe you have an injury and you can't do the strength training you want to do, or the running that you want to do, or insert XYZ activity, but you can do some yoga in your living room, or you can walk up and down the stairs a few times. Whatever it is that you have access to, if you remove the judgment from that thing on how you feel as though it should in quotes, look, and allow yourself to do something that can serve you, that's going to be a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah. I think that people, you know, I really invite people to have an understanding that movement is just a loving conversation with our body, right? Like, you can go for a walk, you can dance. Like, you know how many times I danced in my living room? Like, you know, and sometimes movement for me looks like just rolling my wrists and my ankles in the morning and like looking from side to side and just stretching my neck because that's all I can do, right? So like, I feel like, you know, for people, we don't have to overcomplicate the concept of movement. And for me, movement doesn't need to be punishment. I think we get enough punishment in the world that like we don't need to kill ourselves because we're just adding more stress. Like if our movement is a practice that adds more stress to our body, we're just amplifying the stress in our body. And that's why sometimes some of the things that we're doing, it's not practical or healthy for you. And so just looking at that as a conversation to be like, I'm having a loving conversation with my body through movement. And that could be, obviously, I'm going to say yoga. It could be like, you know, Pilates. It could just be like riding your bike. It could just be like dancing. It could be going for a nice little walk. You know what I mean? It could also just be like hugging a friend. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It could just be like, that's a movement, right? So I just think that like, there's so many different innovative ways that we can reimagine what that conversation with movement looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really love the idea of listening to your body, right? Knowing that one day something could feel really good. And then if you go to do the same thing again, it might not feel the same. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. A week ago, went and ran a handful of miles. And then 5 days later, I went to do it again and it didn't feel the same. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to listen to my body, give it the rest that it deserves, take into account and accommodate for the fact that I was doing things in between those two periods of time that didn't make the second run feel that good. And that's okay, right? So just being gentle with yourself and having some grace and knowing that whatever you do, however you move, it is an opportunity, as you said, to give a gift to yourself and then in turn manage stress. So moving, super important. Also really important, something that we hardly think about, but arguably one of the biggest tools that we have. What is that, Rebecca?
Breathe.
Ah, yes, it's breath work. Talk to me about what taking advantage of your breath can do for the body and our stress response.
You know, as a big proponent of breath work, I always say when I teach, allow this breath to anchor and guide you through this practice and this practice that we call life, right? As someone who works in wellness, I always say like, it's the most accessible tool that we have. Like, we don't have to pay for breath right now, maybe in the future, but right now,
you don't
have to pay to breathe, right? It's something that allows you to express yourself without expressing yourself, right? It's something that you can access that allows you to check in with yourself, right? Like, you can pay attention to your breath when you're frustrated and angry, how fast your breath is going. You have control to be able to take control over that situation and just slow down your breath, right? You have breath that you can do to also like activate you and give you energy. So the breath is like very life-giving. It's the first thing we take when we're born. That's the last thing we take when we transition. So, you know, for me, breath has been something that has been like a really beneficial tool to help just sustain me through day-to-day practices. Anybody who's around me knows, like, I'll just pause just to breathe, right? And whether that's like, you know, like a nice deep inhale and like a sigh, like a yesterday when I taught, I always close all my classes with 3 collective community breaths. And it's really interesting to see people, like, their first inhale is like a little, right? And then by the time we get to the third, they're like, just giving yourself that permission to feel that expansion too as well. And so, you know, breath is a really great tool to be able to access to help slow things down, to calm you down, to help regulate your nervous system. Like there's a strong correlation between that. And again, like I said, it's one of the most accessible tools that we have in our wellness toolbox that doesn't require a lot of work, right? Mm-hmm. It just requires some practice as we start to explore different modalities of breath. But in general, it's just a really easy, accessible tool that's readily available for us and that we use without recognizing it. And once you learn how to like tap into your breath, because a lot of us in this world spend so much energy and time shallow breathing. So when you really start to learn about your breath and how it works for and with your body, like amazing transformations can happen through that.
For someone who doesn't know about shallow breathing or might not realize that they're doing it, explain a little bit about that.
So shallow breathing, so a lot of us just go through life and like a quick, simple thing that I always imagine and encourage people to do is like just like placing hand on chest and hand on belly and just taking some nice slow breaths and just breathing normally and seeing which is rising, whether it's your belly or your chest. And if your chest is rising, then I encourage you to like transition your hand, like maybe make a little triangle with your fingers and like a diamond shape by your belly button. And then just really focus on breathing that air to land in your belly. And it takes practice. So if you don't get it the first couple of times, that's quite all right. But that is the difference between shallow breathing and like they call it belly breath. And it's interesting because when babies are born, when we're all babies, we're all belly breathing. And as life starts to life us, we transition from that belly breath to that shallow breath. And it's really interesting when you're in community and when you're teaching or people, I always see the light bulb go off when they realize like they're breathing here and that they're really not getting the breath to the whole body. And when they have those moments and become mindful of that, it's just really like life-changing for them because you can see them like really focusing on reclaiming their breath. And that simple exercise is a really quick, easy, accessible way to be able to recognize that.
I feel like everyone listening to the podcast right now is probably like, shoot, I've been shallow breathing for so long. And it's nothing to feel some kind of way about. It's just simply the execution of when you know better, do better. That doesn't mean that every breath that you take for the rest of your life now is going to be a deep belly breath.
Right.
But it's having the awareness to know that it's accessible to you and having the awareness to recognize, oh, like this is how I've been doing this thing and I could do it a different way and it can serve me a little bit in a different way. And that's great, right? It's just, again, everything that we're talking about here is approaching the circumstance with some grace so that you can make a tweak and then move forward knowing better.
Mm-hmm. And I think even when it comes down to breath, it's just also understanding that it's there, right? And so when you start paying attention to your breath, like you will realize like, oh, I'm angry right now. Right? Like, you know what I mean? You will realize, okay, like I feel soft right now. Like your breath, like, cause you can tell your breath speeds up, your breath slows down. Like, you know what I mean? And so when you start to really pay attention to your breath, it's a really good way for you to just tap in and recognize. And if you find yourself like shallow breathing, or if you find yourself like, you know, breathing faster, then that's the cue to you to be able to stop and just be like, I'm going to take 2 minutes. I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to breathe.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just reset, self-regulate myself in a way that doesn't require anything than just a moment. And then that doesn't even have to be like 2 minutes. Sometimes it's like 10 seconds. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's like one where you just like a nice deep inhale and then exhaling it out. You're like, and then you just like feel better.
That's
right?
It. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be this big thing. Yeah. It really is a lot about meeting yourself with where you're at. You know, when we talk about goal setting, often we talk about the SMART framework, that's specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, or relevant, and time bound, right? And for someone who has no breath practice right now or isn't even aware of how they've been breathing, to then say, okay, I'm going to be the person that does 10 minutes of breath work every day, that's not really all that relevant or realistic for you. You need to meet yourself with where you're at. So maybe that person then is going to do 1 minute or three deep breaths. Three. That's it. And that could take you a total of 20 seconds max. Mm-hmm. That is how you integrate something into your routine in a way that is relevant to who you are, what you have going on, then over time, you can build off of that. Right. Now, I just said the buzzword routine, and we talked a little bit about different aspects of routine, whether that's movement or breath work, but creating a whole new routine that integrates different good-for-you practices into your day-to-day can also be a major way to manage stress and really come back to calm. I know for me, today is my first day in quite some time back in Brooklyn. And the amount of joy I had from doing my regular morning routine in my regular morning place was unrivaled mm-hmm. earlier today. Why is it that developing routines can be so beneficial for someone who's navigating a stressful time?
You know, I think, well, you know, first and foremost, our brains are just wired for routine. It kind of like predicts certain things, but also there's safety that's in that routine. Let's just preface this that, you know, you have a routine and it's okay if sometimes your routine falls off, and it's okay to jump back on and off the wagon of your routine, right? Give yourself that grace. But, you know, for me, routines is something that has shown up that has allowed me some stability and allowed me space to have balance, right? And so, especially when I understand that the rest of my day or my day-to-day life is not as routine focused and has some moments of unbalance or chaos, having a routine for myself is something that kind of like anchors me. And I think I've noticed a lot of people that I've been working with, they don't have routines. And so they just kind of like wake up in the morning and maybe they don't have a morning routine. And because they don't have a morning routine, their mornings are very chaotic, right? Rather than sitting back and saying, okay, this is how I'd like to start my day. Maybe I need to wake up 5 minutes early, an hour early, depending, you know, I know there's some big proponents of the 5 a.m. club. I'm one of those members, but even if you don't do a 5 a.m. routine, you can do your 8:30 routine and have it be just as impactful as your 5 a.m. routine, right? Mm-hmm. And so like really just focusing on those routines around like how you want to start your day, how you want to end your day, because especially when we're thinking about like a nighttime routine, we're taking that day with us into bed, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know about you, but like I know sometimes if I don't have my routine on point, like my mind will be running a mile a minute. I'll be waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and people will be talking about my cortisol levels and all those kinds of things. But like the reality is that when I have a consistent, concise, really supportive, nourishing nighttime routine, like I don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't wake up cranky in the next day. My mind is not racing as much. And then if I have my morning routine and bookend it with a nice nighttime routine, mm-hmm. like I just feel more full. It's really hard to explain, but I just feel more like I'm doing something for myself.
100%. Yeah, definitely. And for me, if I'm off of my routines, I notice a domino effect for everything I'm doing in terms of the decisions that I'm making throughout the day. I may not eat as well as I'd like to eat. And I'm like, well, we'll just start tomorrow, right? I think the best thing that you can do for yourself is grant yourself the permission to begin again at any moment of the day. It doesn't need to be when you wake up the next day. Also, on the note of what time people wake up in the morning, I was just having a conversation with a friend about this, and I need to hear your POV. If you're an adult, like let's say you are a functioning member of society, I'm in my 30s, let's go like mid-20s and above, you've been in the workforce for a few years. If you are getting up after 8 a.m., I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally,
that's a hot take.
I personally think that like you get so much done with a really productive morning routine. I just feel like your day becomes blurry after 8 o'clock. I'm sorry. I hope I don't offend anybody by saying that.
I just came in with the hottest take of all time.
I'm just like, I just kind of feel like the amount of like stuff I'm able to accomplish prior to 8 o'clock in the morning is insane by getting up earlier, right? And I just feel like it just sets a better tone for me for my day. I do struggle with people who like, I struggle and sometimes I'm a little bit in awe of the fact that you can roll out of bed at 8:30 and be somewhere by 9 kind of vibe. Like, you know what I mean? But then it just makes me question like, and I'm not trying to knock anybody, but like, how are you taking care of yourself before you start your day?
Exactly. And I will say to those that are listening and they're like, well, I'm a night owl and that's when I take my time for myself. Do you know what you're really doing by being a night owl? Like, are you actually serving your body by staying up until 1 a.m.? What would be a little bit different if you listened to your circadian rhythm and went to bed at a more culturally acceptable time? I don't know. I'm just throwing these thoughts into the world.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I just came back from Jamaica not too long ago and I stayed in country and like the roosters crow like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning and like you're up. Like there's no negotiation with your body. Like the sun is literally shining on you and that's how you start your day. So I feel like, you know, and then everybody's starting their day, right? And so, you know, it's very hard for me to kind of like, and when the sun goes down, you're kind of like ending your day kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And so like, I just feel like, you know, I get the whole like night owl thing and all those kinds of things. But I also think that, you know, sometimes those are just reasons and rationales for the fact that we are subscribing to burnout culture.
Yes.
And legitimizing, you know, like survival mode.
And on the note of routine, I really want to make sure that we run this home. I'm not saying you need, just like an exercise snack can be good for you. A routine snack can be good for you. It doesn't need to be some extensive thing in the morning where you're taking 30 minutes for your skincare and breathing for 30 minutes and then journaling for 30 minutes. And then before you know it, you have like a 4-hour morning routine. Nah, it doesn't need to be like that. Meet yourself with where you're at, right? So if you don't have one right now, ask yourself, what's one thing I want to integrate into my morning that's giving back to me, that helps me put on that oxygen mask and then show up how I want to show up mm-hmm. moving forward? It can literally be 1 to 5 minutes, but I encourage you to take that time for yourself so that you can do that for you. You deserve that time for yourself. I am worthy of that time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I really would like to encourage people to step away from like the wellness aesthetic, right? Of like the red light, this, that, like we see that all over like socials and stuff like that. And really just understand this whole entire idea of like what you said, it can be a routine snack. Like I think one time I did a post on Instagram where I was like, you have 5 minutes in the morning. And I showed everyone you could do like 5 minutes of breath work, 1 minute of breath work, drink your water, that's a minute, right? 1 minute of a great gratitude list, 1 minute of like light stretching in bed, and then 1 minute of, I think it was breathing or something like that. And it was 5 minutes.
That's it.
Right? That was it. Because people always come to me like, oh, I want to build a routine. I want to meditate. I want to do this. And I'm just like, they're like, but it's hard. I'm like, let's stop making it hard. And let's just make it accessible. For me, wellness is all about accessibility. And so your morning routine could be getting up 5 minutes, 10 minutes earlier, and just taking that moment to make a good cup of tea or a good cup of coffee, right? I do not have the time nor the energy nor the bandwidth to have a 30 minute, like, and if I did, I wonder what my skin would look like, but like a 30 minute, like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, who has time for that, right?
Nope.
I have time for, you know, a really good oil, right? And, you know, a little good body brushing and all that kind of stuff. But there's some mornings when I don't do all that.
Yeah.
Some mornings I just like, today I can only journal. That's all I have the capacity for. Mm-hmm. And that is fine too. So like when we're thinking about establishing routines too as well, it's okay. Like if you don't do your top 10 or whatever, top 5 for your routine and you just do one, at least you did one thing that gave back to you. And that's what the whole entire purpose of like cultivating these practices around routine are all about. It's about, you know, finding the time and the bandwidth and the space to give back to you.
And differentiating between the concept of it is hard and it feels hard, right? Because you have the opportunity to understand that it feels hard is not a fact. It's just a feeling. When you say it is hard, you're believing that to be how it is. It's hard, period. So shift that mindset and shift your view on that. And you might be surprised at how you can reclaim your power over an otherwise quote unquote hard task or thing that you want to build into your routine. So we've established here, routines can be very good for you when it comes to combating stress, especially because again, it's that moment, that period of time that you're doing something for yourself. And that can be so, so valuable. Something else that can be really helpful in managing stress We talked about taking that walk around the block, getting outside. What is it that being outside does for us, regardless, unfortunately, of the temperature out there?
Yeah, I mean, I tried walking around Brooklyn lately and it wasn't it. But, you know, I think like just getting outside and just, you know, changing your environment, getting some sun on your skin, regardless of how cold or hot it is or wherever you are, just being able to just feel your breath a little bit differently outside. It also provides you the space to be able to just move, right? And whether that walk looks like, you know, like I was telling Emily earlier, I walked to Trader Joe's and that was a different kind of walk than like walking in like Prospect Park, but it's still nonetheless getting outside, right? And if you're able to like build on that getting outside and taking a moment to like, you know, go somewhere where you have access to like a park or something where you can ground a little bit, mm-hmm. or you can sit and meditate a little bit. Like then ancestral speaking, we have that connection to nature. It's all in our DNA being connected to nature. So really just kind of like paying homage and bringing it back to that idea of like being in a natural environment that's really conducive to us. And so, you know, I actively encourage people all the time, like, you know, my oldest son, whenever he calls me, he's stressed out. I'm like, go outside for a walk.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to do it. I'm like, go outside for a walk. And then he'll call me later. And he'll be like, oh, I feel so much better. Right. And I'm like, dude. He's like, I went to the park. I did this. I did that. And I'm like, yeah, see. Right. And so like, you know, again, that's nature, you know, is a prescription that doesn't cost money for us to be able to be outside. And I understand that like, okay, we're having this conversation right now here in Brooklyn, but like, you know, being outside in an urban center can be just as satisfying and fulfilling as being in somewhere like in like the countryside and all those kinds of things. It's what we make out of the experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, mom knows best. Get outside.
Get outside.
Always get outside. On the topic of being outside as well is get outside and be outside. I think that there is goodness. Of course, I want you to listen to podcasts. I want you to listen to Hurdle. I want you to listen to music that brings you back to calm and gives you the vibes if you're going out for a run. But I also think that there's so much value to paying attention to your surroundings and being fully present in nature. This brings about the idea of also being cognizant of what your inputs are. Let's talk a little bit about inputs and what we're putting into our body, not just from a nutrition POV, although that can certainly contribute to stress, but also what we're consuming, whether that be on our phone with social media, the people that are in our life, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, one thing that I did a long time ago when the pandemic actually happened, I can't believe I'm still using that word, but you know, once upon a time, there was a thing called a pandemic. I stopped watching the news mainly because I just mentally didn't have the bandwidth to be able to like process all that information that was coming. And I felt like it was making my anxiety like really elevated. And so one of the practices that I've done to help me manage and navigate stress, and I'm not saying be like ignorant to everything that's going on in the world, like I have ways of being able to access information, but I'm also like really a big proponent of controlling the information that you receive. And so like I've limited like my TV watching time in general, not just like the news, but like how I'm spending my time watching TV. I'm very mindful of like, you know, stuff that I read and things of that nature, the people and the conversations that I choose to have. And if I feel like, you know, they're not supportive conversations or conversations that are bringing me into this very negative or dark space or like stressful, you know, beyond work, right? I also kind of like find ways to be able to remove that too as well, because, you know, there's that saying that we are what we eat. And when we talk about eating, we're talking about like things that we listen to, the people that we keep company with, you know, the different kinds of foods that we're putting into our body, right? And so just really being mindful of that as a practice, I think would be something that if people really wanted to explore and tap into, can make a huge difference. And I feel like a lot of us are in this space where we get a lot of information and the information is really overwhelming and it puts us into these states of like one, we just don't know how to process or deal with it. Two, depending on the information, it's very traumatic. And again, we don't know how to process and deal with it and things of that nature. So just really being mindful of the fact that like you can have a lot more control over that and set that as a healthy boundary for yourself, because you'll be able to access, like I said, I access what I need to access when I need to access it, but I don't welcome in information or things in my environment that aren't like conducive to supporting my overall well-being.
And this is, this makes me think about the purposefulness of a routine, right? Because for me, I used to wake up and the first thing I would do is like look at Instagram, or I used to turn on the podcast, the news podcast that I listened to before I journaled or did breath work. And I realized that doing that put me on higher alert, kind of made me feel some kind of way that I didn't want to start my day feeling like.
Right.
And so instead, now my phone sleeps on its own little charging pad that is not within reach of my bed. That was a huge, great thing that I did when I was cognizant of my inputs. And then now I wait until after the breathwork and journaling to when I'm like getting ready to head out the door to listen to my news podcast. And that's, you know, 10 minutes in the background of me making my bed and organizing my apartment and like kind of setting myself up for the day. That feels good for me. But maybe also in a month, that routine might not feel good for me. And so it's just being cognizant of how do the decisions that I'm making impact how I feel and reflecting on that. That goes back to our first conversation on, wow, how does it feel if I reflect on what's going on here? How does it feel if I take stock of what's going on and allowing yourself to be more present in your day-to-day, in what you're consuming and how that does affect your body?
And I also think what you touched on was something really important is the fact that we should allow ourselves the freedom and flexible to be flexible, right? And not get tied into these static notions of like how things are supposed to be done and how things are supposed to be, right? I feel like, you know, we all are growing and evolving. Like growth is not static, it's constant. And so like what you said, like this week it may work for you. Next week it might be something different. You might find something and add it into your repertoire of things to tap into, right? And so like, you know, when we're thinking about these things in terms of just supporting ourselves as we are navigating stress, like think of these things as all little things that you can put into your toolbox and you can take them out, like tapas. You can try this, try that, and see what works for you. And then, it's okay for you to like say, this isn't working for me and I'm going to put it away for a little while and try something else.
Mm-hmm. And this also beckons us to talk about, you said tapas, so then I thought food. So now I'm going to bring food into the conversation. Also, what you put in your body in terms of nutrition is going to impact if you're feeling stressed, especially when the things that you're putting in your body might not actually be all that nutrient dense. So I'm not of the camp that's going to tell you to eliminate anything entirely. I just don't believe in that way of restriction. But what I will say is if I'm in a place where I'm not really being mindful of what I'm eating, if I'm eating all different things from pizza to French fries to burgers to tacos, and I'm traveling and I'm not getting a lot of sleep, like all these things are going to combine to a place that don't make me feel that good and maybe make me feel more stressed.
Right.
That doesn't mean that there's not a place and time for going to pizza with your buddies. Like, of course there is. But if you're living on a diet exclusively of pizza, I mean, it sounds kind of nice, but candidly, you're probably not going to feel all that great.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also feel like, you know, we don't need to sit here and, you know, hammer it home, but there's so much, you know, evidence that's out there talking about the connection between the brain and the gut. Those are the first two things that are developed when we are embryos. So like, there's that strong connection. And, you know, when you think about it, there's this word, like words called comfort food, right? And so they're naturally predisposed and designed in a way to provide comfort and activate parts of our brain that make us feel a certain way. So I get when, you know, when we're stressed, you know, we might reach for that chocolate bar or the bag of chips or whatever. And if we're living in a constant state of stress, then we're constantly reaching for those things, right? But, you know, it's also renegotiating our understanding and our stories that we tell ourselves around food. You know, and a lot of us don't necessarily have healthy relationships around food. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I don't get stressed. And I, like the other week, I went to a doctor's appointment and I didn't like what the doctor said. And I was so depressed afterwards and sad. I went downstairs at the hospital and I did a balance. I ate this butter pecan tart. And then I had a gluten-free, because I'm supposed to be eating gluten-free, a gluten-free slice of cake. So I was like, that was my balance and a Diet Coke, right? So I was like, okay, there's my balance. I got the comfort and I got the, you know what I mean? For me, that's okay. Because I don't do that on a normal, regular basis. But really examining and having that conversation around how food sustains us, right? And how food not only nourishes us in terms of like our, you know, helps with us, but also helps nourish our brain, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking of the healthy ways that we can sustain a healthy brain and a healthy gut biome is like super critically important. There's so much information out there that lets us know of these things. And also understanding that it's okay to have that balance.
Yeah.
And tapping into the ways in which you can create that balance for yourself and not feel guilty. I don't want people to feel guilty about the relationships that they have with food, right? Because there's also some cultural nuances around food and the stigma around certain people's foods. But also understanding that, like, you can, as long as you're also trying to find accessible ways to meet yourself where you're at that help sustain you in a loving way, right? And so like maybe my conversation when I'm stressed out also looks like I automatically crave something sweet. So maybe I'll reach for like some fruit, which for me is nature's candy. I always tell, that's how I got my kids to eat fruit. I'd be like, it's nature's candy, eat some, right? So like I'll find my way navigating to the store to do that. And, you know, maybe balancing it off with something a little bubbly, like some kombucha, right? But then also I understand that there's going to be a moment where I might reach for something like that too as well. But also being aware of the fact that the consistency is the part that kind of sustains and either makes it a healthy habit or a not so healthy habit.
Like the 90-10, like 90% of the time, maybe you make a quote unquote good choice. And then 10% of the time, it's like, this is a treat myself moment.
Right.
Who hasn't been there, right? Who hasn't been there, like finding the balance between the Diet Coke and the gluten-free cake? It's just, you have to do what feels best for you in that moment with understanding that maybe one day you make the choice that quote unquote wasn't the healthiest one, but then the next time you have the awareness to pivot a little bit. I remember distinctly last year I had a really rough day and I was standing in Soho near a Milk Bar and then also a Mejuri, like the jewelry store. And I consciously chose to go into Mejuri and buy myself like this like $60 ring that I had been targeted for on Instagram instead of going to Milk Bar. And I talked about that with my life coach specifically that week. And I was like, I made this choice and I bought myself a ring. And now I can look down at the ring and think to myself, like, remember when you made that really good choice for yourself? And how would it feel if you continue to follow on that path and make those kind of choices more regularly? And it was really indicative of a place that I was in where I was taking ownership over the choices that I have in the day-to-day. There have been many times within my life, especially with relation to food, where I feel like I don't have ownership over my choices, or I felt as though I wasn't capable of making good decisions. And I've been there. I'm sure many people listening to this have been there, and that's okay. But knowing that you can at any point choose to change that narrative, it might not be easy, but there is opportunity in that. So yeah, I mean, stress, especially when it comes to food for me, has been very difficult literally since I started to understand that I can have agency over what I put into my body. But it's a forever work in progress, and one that I get, again, that word opportunity, it comes up a lot, but the opportunity to learn and grow along with as I grow. I love what you said before about the fact that like growth doesn't need to be linear. And although like we as humans, you know, we have this upward slanting chart for our growth, like that's literally the only thing. Like think about your growth maybe as an entrepreneur or as a woman or as your emotional growth. Like there are going to be moments where it's skyrocketing and going up, and then maybe it's going to go down, and then maybe it's going to plateau for a little bit and go down and go up. And all of this is okay as long as you're learning along the way. There's that saying, it's that there's the journey is the destination. And for so many of us, as we're navigating stress, like all we can do is learn from our day to day and navigate the difficult moments with the understanding that those difficult moments, those hurdles are going to be the thing that teach us how to navigate the next one that mimics that level of difficulty, toughness, et cetera.
And I think that, you know, sometimes we just need to be reminded of the fact that life exists in paradoxes, right? Like you can be happy and sad at the same time, right? Like you can exist in two different places at the same time. Like, so, you know, and if that's the case, then your growth is also going to be paradoxical. Your healing is going to be paradoxical. And, you know, just having that understanding and appreciation for that and the way that it shows up. But I think what this, you know, conversation really centers back to when we're thinking about navigating like stress and whatnot is this idea of like, cultivating a practice of self-compassion and cultivating a practice of just real, honest, open self-reflection, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, we've talked about this many times before, like the idea of tapping back in, asking ourselves what we need, right? What do we need to sustain us, to fill us up? And then finding those tools to be able to do that. But then also taking it a step further and giving ourselves that grace that we give everybody else except for ourselves, right? And that compassion, so that we allow ourselves to be in a place that facilitates growth, that facilitates self-love, that facilitates all these things that we're literally on a quest for. Whether or not we want to hold space and acknowledge that, that's kind of like what life is lifing us through to get to those destination points. But also understanding that, like, you know, that journey is always going to be one that's going to be rough with peaks and valleys, but also it's always constant and it's constantly evolving. And that's the beautiful thing about being humans, and we're humans being, right? So like, you know, really being cognizant of that is really important, and not stuck on the semantics of things.
I am not a burden. I think that that is an idea, a concept that I worked for a long time repeating out loud to myself, because I would be going through moments of stress or moments that I really could use some calm, and felt as though I needed to endure them on my own. It was as though I was trying to prove something to myself. And I think that this is the last topic that I want us to talk on today, is the importance of speaking about your stress, whether it be to a licensed professional or simply to a friend, answering the question, how are you, authentically, and not just going on autopilot, is a great place to start. Chat with me a little bit about how talking to others about how you're doing really can be an important tool to navigating a stressful situation.
Well, I think first and foremost, it just legitimizes. Like, it just allows you to like feel legitimate and authentic in the ways that you're experiencing things and showing up. And sometimes that's all we need, right? And I also feel that it's just like connection and community is, you know, one of those social determinants of health. So being able to foster that sense of belonging, and even if that appears through a conversation where you are talking about stress, allows you to feel that support. And a lot of the times we live in a society that, you know, cultivates us to have an understanding of like, okay, we're supposed to be hyper independent. We're supposed to, you know, if you, you know, the language, like put your big girl panties on, your big boy briefs on, and just like tap on your chest and everything will be well. And the reality of the situation is that I can tap on my chest all I want and I'm still not well, right? And so being open and vulnerable enough to either talk to someone who's a professional, or, you know, find a few friends that you can have open conversations about and be honest with. And if you feel like that's not available to you, you know, having a journaling practice where you can just openly talk to yourself on a piece of paper is just as good. I think that, again, if we're talking about the ways in which our bodies store things, if we're not talking about those things, we're not moving. So like when I said earlier about movement, like movement through something also means that we need to move through the conversations, we need to move through the difficult times. And like that movement in this case looks like us having a conversation about something that is bothering us or stressful, right? And once we have an understanding of that, it just is also freeing up our capacity to like feel safe, right? And also frees up our capacity to understand that it's okay not to be okay. And I think that a lot of us are taught to like move through life not acknowledging the moments where we're not okay, and feeling bad when we're like, hey, it's not okay. And we need to kind of move into a space of saying like, no, I didn't have a good day. And here's why, right? Or yeah, I did have a good day. And here's why. I feel like sometimes people hate talking to me because I'll be like, how are you? And then they'll be like, I'm good. And then I'll be like, okay, but why are you good? Like what, like, you know what I mean? And then they're like, oh, I'm talking to Rebecca, right? And then some people are like, hey, I already know, you already know that I'm not good. So here's what happened, right? Because I also feel like if you're empathic enough, you'll sense when something's up with somebody, and yeah, you'll be able to be like, okay, what's really going on, right? And so I think that we're conditioned to just leave it at I'm good, or it was okay, right? And like, what made it okay? What made it not okay? Because it also provides us an opportunity for our bodies to be able to let us know and communicate our boundaries, right? And so sometimes when we're in these situations and we're under stress or whatever, beyond a professional, just talking to somebody to be able to say, this is what happened. This is the ways in which I felt like angry or my boundaries were crossed, and legitimizing that story for yourself, and also allowing you the space to say, like, I have more than enough feelings that extend beyond I'm good and I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so powerful. Such a good note to end on. There are so many other tools that you can utilize to counteract stress, to come back to calm. But of course, these are just a few to get you started, a good jumping off point. Rebecca, for those that aren't following along with you just yet, give us the deets. How do they keep up with you online?
They can follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Price. So it's R-E-B-E-C-K-A-H Price. I have a website, RebeccaPrice.com. And I have some meditations on YouTube at Rebecca Price.
We love. I'm over at Emily Abadi and at Hurdle Podcast. Come back to calm. You deserve it. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.